You are listening to an American Free Press podcast.
Joining me on the line is Nicholas Landholt. Nicholas, thanks for joining us today.
Well, you're welcome, Dave. Appreciate you having me.
Nicholas, would you prefer if I call you Nicholas or Nick or...
Oh, I've been called many names. The Libertarian Party apparently came up with the militia guy after they found out what I was going to be campaigning on. But Nick is fine.
Okay, great. Thanks, Nick. Nick, we have just met relatively recently, and we actually have something in common, and we'll get into that in a bit. But you told me something very interesting about a congressional run, and I want to get into that and some other things, including what you just mentioned about the militia, the importance of state militias, and some other things like Jim Trafficant and vote fraud and so on. Like I said, I want to get into that in great detail in a moment. But before we do, for the benefit of the listeners, can you give them a little bit of background about who you are?
Sure, Dave. I was born in San Antonio, Texas in 1955, all September, so I'll be turning 62 in a few months. We had a relatively quiet childhood, I guess. Our home was half a block from St. Anthony's School, so I went to a parochial school for the first 8 years, so that was relatively easy and had a lot of friends, what have you. And actually almost went into the seminary, but my dad, you know, we're talking the 60s now, he was seeing some of the uproar that was happening in the Catholic Church, so he thought it best that I not go to the seminary where I could possibly lose my faith. I sort of did during high school and college anyway, but high school, I went to public schools, almost had a baseball career, but basketball started to interest me around 6th, 7th grade, so I ended up doing that pretty much through high school. And only being 5'10", or growing to 5'10", that was the end of any professional ideals I might have had. My dad, he and my mom met at Juilliard in New York. So I come from a very musically inclined family. And he played the trumpet and the organ and piano. But when he was around 18, he went on the road. And we're talking the late 30s, early 40s. So he was kind of in that big band era. And he thought it would be good for me to get into the military and to kind of grow up, you might say. So he wanted me to enlist out of high school, but I was only 17 at the time. So my mom would not actually sign the papers to let me go in until I talked to a friend of ours who he was a commander in the Navy. And after speaking with him, I thought it would be the best route to go the officer direction. And it was too late to go through ROTC or any of that kind of stuff. So I actually ended up going to a 2-year junior college in San Antonio and finished up in 1977 at UT Austin with a Bachelor of Science degree in radio, television, film. But I could not pass the tests to get into officer school. So I ended up enlisting anyway and started to go through the nuclear power program in the Navy. But once you're in the Navy, to get into officer candidate school, you actually go through interviews. So that's what I did, and I got accepted during the prototype part of nuclear power school up in Idaho. And so I traveled to Rhode Island since 1978 now, or actually 79. And started OCS. It was while I was going on the flight to Rhode Island, I met an enlisted Navy guy who was also going to officer candidate school. He was from Hawaii, and he was an EOD, which is explosive ordnance disposal. And I was a sport diver, and the whole diving and bomb squad type stuff interested me. So I ended up changing my designator. Instead of being a ship driver during OCS, I changed it to special operations officer. But the curious thing, or the providential aspect of the whole officer candidate school, was that I met my future wife there. I mean, it was just amazing how God works, but it's amazing that she even got in. And as I said, when I went to surface warfare school in San Diego, actually Coronado, which is where the SEAL team trains, that's where we started dating. After OCS and dating my wife, we ended up getting married in 81. And as soon as she became expecting what ended up to be 3 boys, she immediately got out of the Navy. And we've been married, 36 years now. During the Navy, I was in 10 years, but I started to educate myself on politics and religion. As I said, I was confronted in the Navy by somebody telling me about the Catholic faith, and it wasn't the whore of Babylon, et cetera, et cetera. And so I said, well, it's time to determine one way or the other whether I should be practicing Catholicism or what I should do. So I did some research into that, and I determined that the Catholic Church was the true faith and founded by Jesus Christ. So I became, well, what I call now a bogus ordo Catholic, because the church had changed. As I say, our parents, even though my dad could see changes within Rome and Vatican, they took us to the new church. And it took about 10 years to 1988 to determine that there were almost two churches, one that everyone in the general public sees today with Pope Francis and his scandals, and of course the scandals of the clergy with child abuse, etc., and then your traditional Catholicism, which not too many people see. So in 1988, I basically rejected the new church, bogus ordo, and I call myself basically now a traditional Catholic. But after the Navy, I worked for a priest up in Buffalo, New York, on the Fatima topic, which is Our Lady of the Rosary appearing in Fatima, Portugal in 1917. So we're in the midst of 100 years from her appearances to the three children, warning about dire things and what would happen to the world if Russia was not consecrated to the Immaculate Heart of Mary. And so nowadays I see that Russia is a big, big key to current geopolitics, and you're going to see what happens over the next several years. But after Father Gruner, I went to go work down in St. Mary's, Kansas, became a salesman, and that's kind of been my background since about 1990. So that's kind of a long way around your question, but that kind of gives you an idea. As I mentioned, I started to learn about politics, so I found out while working with Father Gruner the whole issue with Israel and the synagogue of Satan. I don't like to call them Jews. Judaics and those who call themselves Jews but are not give true Jews a bad name. So I kind of like to expose the aspect of the infiltration of Khazars into Judaism and what have you.
Excellent. No, it's important that you took the time to educate the listeners about your background. I think that most listeners really appreciate that when somebody does that. So thank you for taking the time and doing that.
You're quite welcome. I'm basically trying to tell people I'm real. There's a lot of infiltrators, agent provocateurs, false opposition, controlled opposition, loyal opposition. I've heard all three terms. And if you're going to trust somebody, particularly in a congressional campaign, you kind of want to get across to them that you are real. And I'm kind of an open book. I mean, it's been probably 5 years now that I've basically let it all hang out, because in 1996 is when I stopped paying and filing income taxes, when I cut my teeth on Irwin Schiff and his income tax travails. And of course, he ended up dying in prison. I mean, I think they just really wanted to make him an example to other people who might fight. But once I became aware of the income tax, then I stopped that. But I stayed underneath the radar because I had three boys and a wife that I was supporting. But it was in the last 5 years, because the boys are grown now, that I said it's time to have a coming out party. And whether it's shaming patriots or so-called Christians into doing what we're supposed to be doing, living the gospel and taking on the enemy, or what it is, we need to do something quickly. And I just find that the preachers and the clergy, it's a scandal. They've been shut up by the IRS with a 501c3 tax exempt status, et cetera, et cetera. So I want people to know that I'm for real and I'm willing to take the heat, but I need a team behind me. I don't want to be charging up the hill on my own.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's go to the campaign. Why don't you tell listeners about that? What was the genesis of it and how it unfolded?
It was 1990 when I first met Jim Condit Jr., who you know. Jim has been, over the last few years, running congressional campaigns up in Cincinnati, not necessarily to win, but there's a little-known federal law called the Reasonable Access Law that basically forces FCC-licensed radio and TV stations to take the ads of federal candidates. So he's had some success exposing Judeo-Masonry, Israel. In fact, it's funny, back in, 2006 or so, we ran campaign ads regarding the USS Liberty and Commander Jim Ennis, and basically exposing the fact that Israel is not our ally, and they murdered 34 sailors trying to sink the Liberty and wounded 174 other sailors. I wanted to do this as well, so I decided late 2015, I contacted the Libertarian Party of Texas and expressed interest in running for Congress. I mean, a lot of people say, well, start out running for dog catcher or city council or what have you. But the main purpose of running as a congressional candidate is to use this law to reach out to people, direct them to a website to where they find out more and more what's going on in the country. And my perspective is that the country's pretty much gone. So I'm focusing on Texas. So I contacted them. I told them right off the bat that I was pro-life, pro-family, anti-tax. And because they've got at least the national party for the libertarians, they advocate open borders. I mean, it's basically a license to do whatever you want. No victim, no crime kind of thinking. I told them I'm a Christian patriot and these would be issues that I would disagree on. They actually said, well, we're more conservative, that the Texas party is more conservative than the national, and that would be fine. So I said, okay, great. So I filed in December 2015, and it was a few months later that I started to get into the whole militia aspect and the IRS. Basically, most Americans do not owe federal income taxes. And I don't know if those were just two hot issues that the libertarians did not want to address or not, but I told them I've never run a campaign before. Not a JFK or an LBJ or Ted Cruz kind of a guy. I want to be as out front as possible. And I was basically kind of left out there on my own, which was eye-opening, I suppose, but I ran a one-man campaign is the bottom line. I didn't even open up a bank account. Federal candidates do not need to file with the Federal Election Commission until they raise $5,000. So, as I said, not having run a campaign, not knowing rules, I just kind of let it come to me, and it never did come to me. I only actually had one offer of donation. I said, well, just hold on to it until we figure out what's going to go on. So for 2018, and if there's any listeners out there who have campaign experience, and hopefully they're in Texas, I really need a campaign manager to kind of frame the issues for me. As I said, I'm willing to take the heat and do all the controversial or confrontational stuff. I just need a team of supporters behind me. In 2016, running a one-man campaign with no bank account, I still got over 23,000 votes, and according to official counts, 22,613 votes. In talking with Jim Condit about that, I think a little over 200,000 votes were cast. My campaign was against a 10-year incumbent. His name's Mike Conaway. He's a rhino, Republican in name only. He actually has a Liberty score of F with conservative review. So it was a very winnable race. And I think the fact that I got 23,000 votes without basically doing anything kind of tells the level of disgust that Texas voters, or at least West Texians, have with status quo politics is indicative of what could be done. In fact, there's five congressional districts which cover the western half of Texas. And the Libertarian Party of Texas had a congressional candidate running in each of those districts. The other candidates and myself received over 80,000 votes. And they said that's the official tally. In talking with Jim, he actually said that because in my district, over 100,000 votes were early voting. And who knows what happens with early votes, because I've working with Jim on the vote fraud issue for over 25 years. He said it's possible that I could have received 2 to 3 times the amount that was officially given to me. But if you don't have the resources to monitor and hire people, then, you know, it's pretty much just hearsay, I guess. The Libertarian Party of Texas, I think they focused a lot of their efforts on West Texas, that we could actually get 1 or 2 people in office. And as I say, definitely, I know my race is winnable. But you need resources, so that's why I'm looking for a campaign manager and knows what they're doing and can go from there. I may still run just to have a presence out there, but I don't want to mislead anyone, and which is what a lot of these candidates are doing. I can really win. Well, I mean, I'm showing you how I can win and why I can win, but I'm not going to mislead to say that if it's a one-man campaign, I'm going to win, because that's just not going to happen.
Nick, how many votes did the incumbent get?
That 22,613 ended up to be about 10.5%. The incumbent got basically close to 200,000 votes. The congressional district is about 750,000 residents. But you can figure there's probably, say, half of that of voting age. So I'm figuring there's at least another 200,000 or so people who aren't even voting. And by using this reasonable access law, you don't need to actually use ads on radio or TV that actually talk about the campaign, which is why, as I mentioned, Jim was able to talk about USS Liberty, and you talk about other issues other than a campaign. The funds are coming from the campaign, and the ad was paid for by Landhold for Congress kind of a situation. So you can put short little ads directing people to a website across the district and can also be nationwide. So if you raise enough funds, you put these ads on Sean Hannity, Rush Limbaugh, Michael Savage during those talk shows, you can reach a lot of people. So in a rural area like West Texas, ads are probably relatively cheap. Lots of small radio stations that you can place these ads to wake up the non-voters to say, we need to get you registered. And if you want economic freedom, not paying federal income taxes anymore. The other thing is, because we're in a rural area, my district covers 29 counties, 27 full counties and then two partial counties. So there's 29 county sheriffs that we could also be educating on the income tax and why they should be keeping the IRS agents from harassing taxpayers who choose to actually follow the IRS regulations regarding income tax. That was actually something I brought up to Jim McAfee, the entrepreneur, the McAfee virus guy, who's a bit of a controversy himself. He mentioned to me that hasn't paid income taxes for the last 4 years, I guess. But on a Texas-wide conference call, I mentioned to him what I was wanting to do. And he said, you see, folks, that's what we need, somebody with the guts to take on the establishment. And he offered to come protest with me and get arrested protesting income taxes. And I said, well, the idea is not to get arrested. The idea is to educate people that we don't owe it. They shouldn't be paying something they don't owe. But he kind of had other things going, and I never really got any help from him either. So it's kind of disappointing, but hey, it's what God wants for now. We'll see if something changes. But I'd love to be able to go forward if I can.
I don't want to get very in-depth into this, obviously, for the reason of time, but can you just give the listeners a summarized version of why it is that they really don't have to pay taxes?
I always tell people we're distinguishing here between income taxes and other taxes. Obviously, I pay taxes. I pay my fair share. You pay taxes almost all the time, sales tax, gas taxes, etc. But federal income taxes, I'm not a federal citizen. I don't work for an employer who contracts to the federal government or what have you. And that's kind of in a nutshell what it boils down to. But I offer people plenty of information, and I don't ever advise somebody to just stop paying taxes. That's a decision you're going to have to make on your own. But that's where the militia comes in. Basically, if we the people are going to take back the country, we have to get back our power as well-regulated militia, as distinguished from private militias. We don't need any more Wacos, Ruby Bridges, or Oregons, the Lloyd Finicum, the Bundys, etc. If they'd been pushing and organizing to get their state militias together, Lloyd Finicum might be alive today. The money powers are not going to give up their investment, and we're talking over 100 years, without a fight. And, of course, they used the police state as their weapon of choice to fight Christian patriots. And I have a video. I've got a Facebook page. It's a political organization. It's Landholt for Congress. And they can watch about an hour video on why most Americans do not owe income taxes. And there's just tons of other information out there. But we need to organize and get together our militias because, as the Founding Fathers said, if you read between the lines being the first 13 words of the Second Amendment, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. Reading between the lines, the founder is saying, no militia, no free state. And that's what I'm trying to get across, not only to voters, but to the youth, because the youth have no future if they don't get involved and help us turn things around.
Okay, and the purpose of the militia as it relates to the federal income tax is that it would be used to physically fight the federal government?
No. I mean, militia is a defensive situation. And it's not just fighting, but militias can be used for natural disasters, Hurricane Katrina and those kind of things. Instead of having FEMA, National Guard troops, the local militarized police forces going up and down the street, knocking on doors and taking weapons away, you'd have local people who are militia helping out during situations. purpose of the militia was threefold: to execute the laws of the Union, repel invasions, and suppress insurrections. So you have these things like Black Lives Matter, the Soros-funded anti-Trump activities, and I'm not pro-Trump, but we need to stop these funded communist infiltrators, agitators, from doing what they're doing, and conservatives have been just kind of weak on that issue. As I say, the IRS, the money powers, they're not going to go away quietly, so I assume that we're going to need to have defensive purposes. The NRA, who I believe is false opposition, they told Dr. Edwin Vieira, who actually is an NRA member, and he's a militia scholar and constitutional attorney, they told him they weren't interested in the militia aspect. They just want to promote the individual right to keep and bear arms. Well, in 1903, with the passage of the Dick Act, which is unconstitutional, basically suppressed all the state militias. Eventually, the National Guard came in. Everybody else who was militia, we the people, were relegated to being unorganized militia. In Texas, they're called reserve militia. States vary. But if we the people are going to do something to get the country back, we need to organize. And there's good guys and bad guys, and we just need to have a defensive force available. I mentioned another aspect of the militia is to repel invasions. Of course, here in Texas, our southern border is being invaded, has been invaded for decades. We don't need to build a wall. That's a nice political soundbite for Trump. We don't need federal people on our Texas sovereign land building a wall. The Texas militia, which I estimate to be around 10 million Texians, we can set up a rotational watch ourselves and secure our border pretty much immediately.
You sent this to me in an email. You said that you wanted to talk about, obviously, your campaign and your radio show as an extension of your campaign to motivate Christian patriots to organize their state militias, with emphasis on what is happening now in Maine and Texas. What's happening in those two states?
AFP listeners may remember or know John Kottmeyer. I've known John for, well, when I started to get into the whole income tax issue, I came across Save a Patriot Foundation back in the 90s, and John heads that up and has headed that up for some time. He offered me a slot on his radio station, Liberty Works Radio Network, earlier this year. Again, I'm no Rush Limbaugh or Michael Savage talk radio host, but I thought, okay, well, it'd give me an opportunity to get the truth out there for people and to perhaps help organize. So I came up with the name Christian Revolt Long Overdue, which is actually the title of a book by the late Dr. Ray Jurjevich, another book that he wrote, Fear of the Jews Syndrome. I sell these books, but I wanted something eye-opening and controversial as a title. So Christian Revolt Long Overdue, I dubbed the program, and I basically am wanting to get people to understand that we need to get state militias back. And what happened through my contacts, I met Daniel Vincent McGonigal III, who is also a militia scholar, and he's worked with Dr. Edwin Vieira in the past as well. And he submitted a proposal. The state of Maine actually does not have the term unregulated militia. So he was able to submit a proposal, which is, I guess, sitting on the governor's desk, that the governor could actually call up the militia because the people are being enrolled, basically. In Texas, it's a little bit different because we, the people, have been designated as reserve militia. There is an avenue that Daniel found in his research that allows for the governor of Texas to issue an executive order to actually begin enrolling militia in the various counties. So he is drafting a proposal, which I will actually take to Austin and try to get on the governor's desk. We're hoping that it might be done in time. Greg Abbott, who is the Texas governor, he lacks a lot of courage, I think, but he is considered conservative, and I hope to be able to present this to him in a special session he called. Texas has a legislative session every other year, and it's every odd year. So this year, it goes from January to basically the end of May, but Governor Abbott called a special session, and it can be, I think, address any number of issues. 2 years ago, in 2015, the Texas legislature did nothing to address the sodomites who ended up that summer with the Supreme Court decision of being able to marry, quote unquote. Governor Abbott, conservatives had hoped that he would call a special session to address that and basically kind of bring about a Religious Freedom Restoration Act in Texas. but he did not. And so I'm not exactly sure why he called a special session for this year. I think it has something to do with taxes, in particular property taxes. But Daniel and I are hoping that we'll be able to get this militia enrollment proposal to him. The special session starts, I think, July 18th, and I'm not sure how long it can go. But if we can get that to him, or at least start getting the press on it. And Alex Jones supposedly lives in Austin. Glenn Beck is another, well, I'll just say another talk radio guy. He relocated to the Dallas-Fort Worth area. So I'm going to try to force the issue with these two guys to see, are they really for Texas or not, or at least for militia? Again, I guess I want to reiterate, we're not talking private militias here, which are easily infiltrated by agent provocateurs to try to get people to do something. Schaefer Cox, who you may be familiar with, he was up in Alaska with the militia there. He's apparently a really well-articulated young man, and they somehow got him into a position where he's in jail, kind of a political prisoner at this point. We're not dealing with private militias. This is constitutional, and the people will see that. We need to educate the people on that, because the media has been demonizing militias for quite some time. Definitely Militia Montana, I remember back in the, I guess it was the 80s. They were given quite a bad rap as well. So we need to distinguish ourselves, constitutional militia, from private militias, and I think we can do that.
What if there's listeners in your district or outside of your district or anywhere, really, who want to help you win? Where would you send them? Is there a website you would send them to or a phone number they could call?
I would say the best way to reach me is email, Facebook, and I can give a phone number for an organization that I'm working with to help get the word out. As I say, my particular focus is Texas, but my email is N for Nick, and then my last name, Landholt, L-A-N-D-H-O-L-T, at hotmail.com. So that's nlandholt@hotmail.com. My Facebook page is Nicholas Landholt, and that is with a D, L-A-N-D-H-O-L-D-T. So you'll go to Facebook and just put in Nicholas Landholt, and you'll see an icon of Christ the King on my Facebook page. Again, Landholt for Congress is my political organization. They can send me a message that way, and that's Landholt, and that's spelt... It gets confusing. That's spelled the birth certificate spelling, L-A-N-D-H-O-L-T, Landholt for Congress. And then phone number, I work with Citizens Committee for Restructured Government. They can reach me there. And if I find out we're talking a legitimate concerned voter or supporter, then I'll end up giving them my private number. But for CCRG, they can reach me at 631-741-1757.
Nicholas Landholt. Nick, I want to thank you so much for the time you spent explaining all this to the listeners. You are a great American, and you're a great guy. In the short time I've got to know you, there are some people who you just know that they're just nice. They're just deep down nice, and I'm sure it has a lot to do with the extra care and attention your folks paid to you growing up, it sounded like. And I hope that, well, I was going to ask you earlier if they're still living. I sure hope they are.
My dad passed away, gosh, June 11th of last year. My mom passed away in 2010. They lived quite a long life. My mom well into her 80s and my dad into his early 90s. Yeah, I appreciate their support and passing along the faith to me. And that is what keeps me afloat. That's for sure, Dave.
Well, I'm glad to hear that they did have long lives. When you explained how they really took the extra care to pay attention to you, not like the parents nowadays who have one hand on a phone and tattoos all over their bodies. For the listeners who would want to go to that website to study the tax issue, can you direct them to that again?
My Facebook page has a video. It's on YouTube. Most Americans do not owe income taxes. They can put that in the YouTube, or they can go to Landholt for Congress. Landholt for Congress has a lot of other information other than the income taxes, and people can pretty much get an idea of what I stand for and what we're trying to do right now, what I'm trying to do, to get together an organization that can make a difference. But we'll leave it up to God as to how successful we are. They can also go to Land Holt for Congress to find out some of the other organizations that I am working with. In fact, the Free Energy Party may endorse me as well. I'm trying to get all of these freedom-loving third parties to endorse me, because the key with running on the Libertarian Party of Texas ticket is that they have ballot access. So Texas has made it difficult for other independents and third parties to get on the ballot. So if you're on the ballot, that is just a huge, huge advantage. Your name is on the ballot. And that's why I think I got over 23,000 votes. As I said, a one-man campaign was not able to get the word out. But people were so disgusted with the Republican incumbent that they saw another name on the ballot, and it was a protest vote. So that's fine. But now we need to take those 23,000 votes and turn them into about 200,000, 300,000 votes.
Absolutely. That's the idea. And that would be terrific to have a man such as you in Congress, who obviously is concerned with the country. And there's a lot of reasons why the people in there are powerless. And one of them is the fact that they literally have to pay for their positions on committees, which a lot of Americans are completely unaware of. But let's see what we can do. And again, Nicholas, thanks so much for the time you spent explaining this to the listeners. And I'm looking forward to talking to you again real soon.
Well, I appreciate the time and the opportunity as well, Dave. Take care and Godspeed.